It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 505, and it's August the 9th. 1981. I think it is. The time goes so quickly, I can't keep track sometimes. I did make one error last week. I think this is beginning my 11th year on the air, and I can't remember a time where I have done this, or else people haven't called attention to it, and nobody caught it yet. But I realized as soon as I was home and the program was over that I had confused two names of information about a particular party. The behavior of Ed Butler, working for the Young Americans for Freedom as an agent provocateur. He worked for Patrick Frawley, not Ed Pauley. Ed Pauley, who died recently, who was a very wealthy oil man in California, was the man who prepared Lyndon Johnson for the 1960 conventions and convinced him to run against John Kennedy at that time. He was active in the party. He originated from Indianapolis and moved to California, and he coordinated lend-lease supplies in Great Britain with the Soviet Union. And this man was very active, working parallel and along with Patrick Frawley, Ed Pauley. The name I got wrong. It was Ed Pauley, who passed away last week, but Ed Butler, the man that I mentioned, worked for Patrick Frawley in California. He worked for Frawley and formed the original Libertarian Party there. He had an organization that the CIA had set up. They called themselves the Libertarian, and Ed Butler had worked for Patrick Frawley and Charles Colson at the hard hat demonstrations for the Information Council of the Americas to have demonstrations. And he worked with Lee Harvey Oswald to set up a cover that he was an agent of Fidel Castro, or sympathetic to Castro, where he actually worked for the CIA. Ed Butler also, as I said before, had spread a cover story, the first published article, that the blacks had killed Sharon Tate and her family and her friends, her baby and her friends, her unborn child, and the LaBiancas. It was Ed Butler who was doing all this mischief, but he worked for Patrick Frawley and not Ed Pauley. And as soon as I got home, I should have looked that up on my files when Ed Pauley passed away. But they had worked so closely together in Los Angeles area in the clandestine operations and in the political parties that put Lyndon Johnson into power. The excuse is not good enough. I shouldn't make that kind of a mistake. And I don't remember if I've done it before, but I apologize. They're both passed away, but that's not the point. This evening, Ronald Reagan pulled the strategy that was described in the New York Times as Reagan's good news strategy. He comes out on the screen and tells you, or in the Rose Garden, what's good news. And then when there's bad news, an article in the Times described how he disappears then and leaves the press to answer any questions. He disappeared with the air controller's strike, and he no sooner got out to California to Santa Barbara Ranch, and he let go of the decision of the neutron bombs. He doesn't have to see people, and he's far away from the action. And he says the opinion of the Allies, he sent a message, has nothing to do with what Americans want to do to defend themselves. He also limited questions of his aides this week. He's the first president of the United States. It's unprecedented. According to Associated Press story, the unprecedented gag rule on reporters in the Oval Office and picture-taking sessions and so forth, that if they ask questions of him, they will be fired. And he left angrily and will not answer the questions, and has demanded that the press corps, members of the press who cannot observe the request, are asked to excuse themselves from any photo sessions. As I say, this is described as unprecedented of any president, but he is unprecedented, so it's par for the course for Ronald Reagan. There are a bundle of news stories I want to cover. I'm just, again, going to list the date and the titles for you people who tape the shows and look up the articles, because hopefully I'll get back to them. I know I will, but I want to run them down now while they're easy for you to get. I don't have the page numbers of the newspapers, and I promise a listener from now on I'd put that on the printed sheets for you. If you want the bibliographies of the program, you can write to me, send a self-addressed stamped envelope with 25 cents enclosed for the printing, and I'll send you sheets from any program or series that you want with the information that we have on the air. One story that I briefly mentioned for a second last week that I still want to get back to, is July 29th, 1981, a New York Times story, secret group linked to the killing of French detective. That's Dr. Jacques Massé, M-A-S-S-I-E, his wife, his in-laws, his 8-year-old son, and a friend. The important thing is that he was murdered in Marseille. He was part of the French internal security system, the secret army organization. He had to work with Licio Gelli, the Italian Masonic leader of the Italian Masonic scandal that has fled down to Argentina. And the New York Times quoted one person saying he had to be shot. He knew too much. This is a man that could link to the Marseille, Turkey narcotic connections that I talked about earlier, the motive for shooting John Paul II and for shooting Ronald Reagan at this time. There's an interconnecting link, a lot of links I want to get into, but in the meantime, get that story. Another story, July 26, 1981, fugitive ex-agent offers deal. CIA Edwin Wilson meets U.S. officials in Rome, Italy, also in Rome. I've done many, many weeks on Edwin Wilson, the agent who hires assassination teams, who deals in assassination weapons, narcotics traffic, and death, deals in those. That's the way he makes his living, selling not only Gaddafi, but Idi Amin in many, many countries and organizations around the world. Now, Wilson's been charged with a murder charge and for weapons selling, dealing in the United States, and he is in Rome. Interpol let him in. They are meeting with agents to make a deal that Wilson would come home and not have the murder charges because he has that $3 million farm next to Senator John Warner in Virginia. His wife wants the property, and there's a divorce coming up there. He's left the country. He made a deal. It's in the Washington Post. If you will give me immunity for a murder charge, I'll kidnap and produce two agents that the CIA wants. Well, he's very generous. He was going to bring in two agents, some Cubans and Chilean nationals that are down in Chile that were involved in the Orlando Letelier and Sandra Moffat murder. So here's a guy who hires from the highest levels of the CIA these people, and he was linked to the detonation bombs that went off, they did the murder on Embassy Row, and he says, I'll bring in two of my employees if you get me off. And I believe that that deal was made by July 26, 1981. Before this, they were trying to squeeze Mr. Casey out of the CIA with his links to Robert Vesco to get Mr. Inman in from Navy Intelligence. And Casey probably pulled a, no, you can't fire me or I'll pull the rug out from under you. They released Max Ugel, who was a deputy under Casey, sacrificial lamb in a ball of wax there. But that's why the talk of murdering Gaddafi that was in the Newsweek magazine and on the headlines just a week and a half ago came out. I'm sure that Edwin Wilson wouldn't bring home two Chileans from South America for his immunity, so he probably was going to go for the big boy, which would be Gaddafi, and that's why the plans to kill Gaddafi were spread around the world, and members of Congress had stopped at that, and then they switched and said, no, we were going to have a coup in Mauritania. The transaction of switching from Gaddafi to Mauritania to Chileans to bring them home makes sense when one of the biggest officials since the Watergate is bargaining to come back to the United States. This is an important story. He's making deals now to wipe out some of his agents. Now, one of his agents is Abu Daoud, D-A-O-U-D, who was shot six times in Warsaw just this week. He isn't dead yet, and the headlines have been saying, a man blamed for the Munich massacre, the Olympic Games, the Israeli athletes, was shot in Poland. This was August the 6th, 1981, the London Daily Telegraph, the San Jose Mercury. Terrorists blamed for Munich massacre shot in Warsaw. But in January 23rd, 1978, the Associated Press had PLO's Olympic massacre boss and seven others slain, Ali Salameh in Beirut. Now, we've read that Carlos the Jackal was involved with the Munich killings. Turpel and Corcoran and Wilson were involved. And we have a man in 1978 that was supposed to be murdered who was the boss. And just this week, another boss was shot. So the point is that in exchange for Wilson being allowed to come back to this country and start his own killing operations again, there's going to be a lot of deaths to prove that he's clinging up the operations, and all of them are the people that he worked with and hired or had somebody hire for him. They're great heroes in this country, and if you're thinking of joining the CIA, you better think twice of what they do to you if they want to bargain for their own lives. August the 4th, 1981, another article, unhappy millionaire Carlos Marcello, the mob boss from New Orleans, has been convicted on one charge of conspiracy. 11 charges were dropped, but his co-worker, Irv Davidson, got off. He also had been indicted down New Orleans. I did a broadcast, I don't remember how long ago, I'll have to look that up, on Irv Davidson. He is one of the highest officials of the United States government who goes all the way from the John Kennedy assassination up to the present era of conspiracies and espionage agency operations. Irv Davidson, no way could be indicted to, he was indicted, but convict him would be like getting Agnew, Nixon, and John Mitchell out of office. Those men went out, but they were paid heavily, paid off, and are all ganging together now. But Irv Davidson simply knows too much, and he threatened to talk, as have others, so he got off his charges. And Marcello not only was convicted this week, but then he was indicted the same day in Los Angeles for bribing Judge Pragerson on another mob case. So maybe Marcello, the unhappy millionaire, is getting old, and maybe they'll sacrifice him, too, so that the team stays in office. New West, August the 8th this week, has an article, Murder in Paradise. I talked a while back on that murder down in Santa Barbara of Giovanni Schoenman, he's an artist and sculptor, Kimberly Roberts, and Cornelius Mall. Get the article if you're interested in that subject. It hits bases onto art galleries and drug dealing or diamond dealing, as whichever you want. It's in Lompoc and Santa Barbara, right next to the federal prison, and also he has a home right not too far from Ronald Reagan's ranch. It involves Iran and London and South Africa, a Seattle court reporter, South Korea, and another interlocking ball of wax. It's an interesting article. Get that if you can. New York Times, August the 14th, 1981. Worry over illegal arms exports grows among... No, this is, pardon me, July 14th, 1981. I'm going too fast for you, or for me. July 14th, almost, it's a month ago already. Worry over illegal arms exports growing among the U.S. prosecutors. And it's got a picture of Edwin C. Wilson, the same man who is in Rome, Italy, meeting with the very person that was doing the stories on Mohammed Aja and the shooting of the Pope. These are interlocked espionage operations, and Edwin Wilson is sitting in Rome with immunity at the present time. And this article is about weapons being taken out of China Lake, California, and stolen under the eyes or for the CIA. It has to do with various agents that went to Philadelphia and then were apprehended in California. And this also has a lot, this article, a lot to do with Frank Turpel's activities and Edwin Wilson. I'll get back to the article later, the interlocking links of the CIA to these people. And then that goes on down to Texas, to the shooting of Judge Wood, who was cracking down on narcotics traffic and on narcotic crimes. And then later, oh, maybe a few months from now, if I have time, we'll go and make the connections of these people to the killing of particular witnesses in that jail in New Mexico where they were tortured and wiped out, witnesses to these very important events that were all wiped out that particular evening in a cruel manner. Another article in New York Times, July 23rd, a week later. Inquiry in smuggling finds New York role in arms trafficking. And this has to do, again, with weapons being sent out of California and through New York of Turpel and George Corcola. This article then mentions George Corcola. Jack Anderson is writing about Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, and he leaves out Corcola, and I wonder why he leaves him out, because Corcola is the biggie of the, if there's four men, Theodore Shackley, Edwin Wilson, Frank Turpel, and George Corcola. Jack Anderson has a little allergy to that name, so write it down or circle it if you have the printed sheet. He had an article this week, August the 5th, Notorious Associated, and he tells about John Dutcher, D-U-T-C-H-E-R, who's a member of the notorious Turple Wilson gang of international gun runners and cutthroats, and he felt that they were after his associate for the research they have done on Turple and Wilson, and they felt that Dutcher had a hit list that it includes the name of his associate, Dale Van Atta, who's been investigating the Turple Wilson operation for almost a year now. He said the only time Dutcher's name surfaced was in New York Times, December 24th, 1979, where they described in the New York Times a third man who worked with a team of assassins and bragged that he was an international assassin and killed other people and worked with Frank Turple in England, where they owned a lodge, a hunter's lodge in Crewe, England. Now, Jack Anderson refers to the New York Times leaving out a third man's name, and he's writing about Dutcher and Wilson and Turple. But Jack Anderson is leaving out George Corcola's name. And Jack Anderson has a very interesting background of tangled connections to the Korea Gate gang and to Madame Chenault and to the Mormon mafia in Utah. And Jack Anderson is very selective. What he writes is good, but he keeps referring to a third man that Dutcher worked for, but he won't use the name George Corcola. It'd be interesting to find out why. Also, there was an article, Panamanian's Grief Over Torrijos is Hardly Visible. This is Los Angeles Times, August the 4th, 1981, and it tells how Barbara Bush, the wife of our vice president, was sent to the funeral of Torrijos. That's interesting because Anderson had an article also the end of July that Marcos is due for a fall. We sent Vice President Bush to the inauguration of Marcos to that rigged election of that miserable fascist. And then we sent his wife, that poor woman, down to the funeral of this drug dealer, this Torrijos. We're sending them to the biggest narcotic traffic places in the world, but that's fitting for the vice president and the former director of the CIA, because that's what their game is narcotics traffic at the highest levels. So it's fitting that Mrs. Bush goes to Panama and he goes to the Philippines, I guess, to cover their bases. We also sent the Joint Chief of Staff down at the funeral. This was August 4th, 1981, of Torrijos, where he was described as such a fine, wonderful person. The Los Angeles Times said that for nearly 13 years there was repression, corruption, bad economics, and he couldn't get more than 10% of the vote, so he gave it to somebody else, and then he kept all the power. And Reagan at one time had called him a tinhorn dictator, but now he was very important to American and narcotics traffic, and Mr. Bush was giving him a different kind of a message of deep sorrow, as was Jimmy Carter. They sent the Shah down there when he wasn't wanted here. Well, the funeral described in the Los Angeles Times, August the 4th, 1981, describes, as I say, as corrupt and repressive and so forth. But the next day, August the 5th, 1981, the New York Times has an article, FBI reveals a huge probe of drug cash. And this article goes into that Florida arrest of a multi-million-dollar narcotic trade that supplies $4 billion annual surplus. The Federal Reserve reports a $4 billion surplus, and the narcotics that goes through Miami is a $7 billion a year. Federal Reserve banks have currency shortages. The Federal Reserve Bank has been reporting a $4 billion annual surplus. The retail trade in illegal narcotics traffic in this area in Panama is $7 billion, so that's $3 billion more than the Federal Reserve had. And they made a investigation and used laundered money and pulled in 61 suspects. At the time, 28 were arrested in one place and seized one evening this last week. They had $4 million in cash. They had $2 million in a Panamanian bank account, $2 million in real estate, and the contents of 58 bank accounts in Florida. So Torrijos dies in a plane crash the week of August the 2nd in Panama, and he's strongly linked to narcotics traffic for years, ever since he's been in office, and escalating. And the same time that his plane blows up, the FBI have arrested these people with the Panamanian money, and I'm sure there was no connection between the necessity to blow up Torrijos and the money found from Panama in that drug arrest. Don't think that I would ever believe there is a connection any more than Jim Jones' deposits in Panama banks, and all the drugs that they had, and gun running, and medical experiments on people. I don't want you to think I'm jumping to conclusions, hardly. There's an article, San Francisco Chronicle, the Associated Press, CIA Jonestown link. They're going to try and defend Larry Layton in the charges of shooting a federal agent at the airport, and Chief of Mission Richard Dwyer, former U.S. Chief of Mission in Guyana, and also a Representative Leo Ryan. Layton has been charged with the shootings, and the defense team are going to use a CIA link. They're not going too well. I've worked or talked with the defense team, and the CIA is holding up all their papers. Most of the papers on Jonestown, it's completely bottled up, but that's the line that they're going to do, and the newspaper covered it that way. I mentioned last week the murder, the beating up, and kidnapping of Max C. Ugel. He's the brother of a man who was working in the security system in Japan. His brother was in Japan for many years, with the CIA, undercover agent, with various agencies, and he was dropped out of the CIA as the deputy director of the operations, the secret clandestine operations, when the heat came on Casey for putting him there. But Ugel, the chief of clandestine operations, was an important man in Japan. And just when this story broke about William Casey, they're going to exhume Dennis McNeil, the brother of the two men that blew the whistle on Ugel. I talked last week about his being murdered, Dennis McNeil. But this Ugel was an important man in Japan, and he worked over there. And as the stories were breaking, I said on the air last week about the head of the Japanese mafia, the large head, being murdered last week, the vice president of Wells Fargo being stabbed to death, the links of the Wells Fargo missing millions of dollars to the Japanese mafia and intertangled espionage stories. Ugel worked in Japan, and so did William Colby, as a lobbyist for Japanese operations that could be CIA friends for all of Southeast Asia, and even were for the SLA when it formed in this country with Colson Westbrook. So the Ugel story is a big story because of his Japanese links. And just when all this can of worms was breaking, the brother of McNeil, the fellows that blew the case on Ugel, one of them was beaten up. He was kidnapped and beaten several times and had serious injuries. And he died June the 1st. Well, that was just recently, when all of these stories and the tumult and the revelations of the Wells Fargo and the Nugan Hand Bank were breaking. This brother of the two fellows that worked with Ugel, he died a death that is questionable. So they are going to exhume him to find out what was on his body and determine the cause of his injuries, because he had injuries, and they put him to rest without, thank goodness they didn't cremate him, and goodness knows what they'll find. But now they're admitting that the death, June the 1st, was questionable. So that they're going to bring up Dennis McNeil. His brothers are still hiding. They claim they'll surface soon. They're still alive. And they blew the whistle on a very important man, Max Ugel, who worked mostly in Japan and was a close associate of William Casey, who is holding the line in the CIA, at least for the time being. Wall Street Journal had an article August the 4th, 1981. Casey Flapp laid by some to the old boys who want a career officer at the CIA helm. They want an admiral. They want a Navy intelligence man with the airstrike. We're going to have the military at the airports. We'll have the Navy and the Army in the drug control operation, and they want a Navy person. We had one under Jimmy Carter as director of the CIA. Sanville Turner was a graduate of Annapolis along with Jimmy Carter. And what they're really pushing for is a military man at all bases, and cover this country pretty tight, getting rid of the civilian offices and putting in the military. I want to mention now some of those stories I'm going to go back to at length later, and it took me a half hour to run down some of them, but they're very important articles, and you shouldn't miss them in the local papers, and it's easier to get them in the week or two that they come out the library than to dig for them later. I didn't mention last week the death of Paddy Chayefsky at age 58. He died from a cancer. I don't know whether it's a Jack Ruby cancer or Martha Mitchell cancer. There's a town in Pennsylvania that's doing research on cancer houses or areas where certain people die to see if it's a virus or what's causing the cancers in any particular section of this town. I think that the researchers should get together now. It's time to have a chart of people that political activists, civil rights people, people from the arts and lawyers and so forth that die at very early ages of cancers or witnesses to trials that are wiped out at early ages of cancer. Paddy Chayefsky did many things for movies and TV, but I guess his finest was Network. I think that was the best thing that I remember him for. And he had that famous line where the people are looking out the window and yelling, "We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take this anymore." They didn't like what was going on, and they began yelling and screaming. There are a few lines of Network that are worth remembering. And to describe Paddy Chayefsky, I thought maybe I'd just read a couple of those with you from the movie Network, when the audience is yelling back, "We're mad as hell and we're not going to take this anymore." He gets on television as a television newscaster, and he says, "You and 62 million other Americans are watching me right now, and less than 3% of you read books. Less than 15% of you read newspapers, because the only truth you know is what you get over the tube. There's a whole, an entire generation right now who never knew anything if it didn't come out of this tube. The tube is your gospel. It can make or break your presidents or your popes and your prime ministers. This tube is the most awesome damn farce, or force, in farce, I add that one, in the whole godless world. And woe to us if it ever falls in the hands of the wrong people. This network," he said, "is in the control of CCA, Communications Corporation of America." He didn't say MCA or whatever letters you want. He said CCA, "one of the largest companies in the world, with their damn propaganda force. It's a whole godless world, this tube. Who knows what crap," I'll put that instead of the other word, "will be peddled for truth on this tube. Television is not truth. Television is a damn amusement park, a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, singers, dancers, lion tamers, sideshow freaks, football players, baseball players. We're in the boredom killing business. If you want the truth, go somewhere else, anywhere. You're never going to get truth from us. We'll tell you anything you want to hear. We lie like hell. We'll tell you Kojak gets the killer, that there's no cancer in Archie Bunker's family, no matter how much trouble the hero's in. Look at your clock, and at a moment when it's just about over, he'll win. You people sit there," he said. Paddy Chayefsky put this in the Network. "Day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, and creeds, all of you, you're beginning to believe the illusion we're spinning here. You're beginning to think the tube is reality and your lives are unreal. You do whatever the tube tells you. You dress like the tube. You eat like the tube. You think like the tube. It's mass madness, and you maniacs, in God's name, you people are the real thing." This is Paddy Chayefsky's script. He said, "Turn it off now." And then as a result of what he says on there, he's taken into the offices of Valhalla. That's the TV executive. And he is given his instructions by Mr. Jensen. They said, he says to him, "You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, Mr. Beale, and I won't have it. You think that you have stopped businesses. That's not the case. The Arabs have billions of dollars from this country. They'll put it back. It's ebb and flow. You are an oil man who thinks in terms of nations, and you must think of people. There are no nations. There are no people. There are no Russians, there are no Arabs, or no Third World, or the West. There is only one system, multinational, interwoven, petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmark, pounds and shekels. It's an international system of currency, and that's what runs the planets. There is no America, there's no democracy. It's ITT, IBM, ATT, DuPont, Dow, and Exxon. And that's what it is," he tells them. "There are no nations. There are corporations. You don't live in a world of nations." That is Paddy Chayefsky. And those were his words. I was reading his words from Network. We'll take a 1 minute break and get back onto the radio, not the TV.
This concludes the first half of World Watchers International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.